to Scary Basement, where me and my friend Mikey have to review horror movies. Or die. Worst of all, we're trapped in this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been. Including a reanimated head that screams. A demonic lantern that projects your nightmares into reality. A YouTuber apology video with the comments turned off. And a cute, but evil, little toy monkey. I'm Roxy Polk.
And I'm Mikey McCaller. Roxy, let's talk about this monkey toy. He has been following me around all weekend long.
Yeah, he's been getting closer to you gradually. Like, when you're not looking at him, I've noticed he kind of creeps. Is that one of those weeping angels?
It wouldn't be so bad if it was one of those monkey toys that's like a stuffed animal that has a cute curly tail. He's a cymbal-based monkey toy. My least favorite. They clap a cymbal the whole time.
Mikey, have you ever seen Merlin's Shop of Mystical Wonders, the movie?
No, that sounds like a production your nephew would put on.
I was introduced to it via Mystery Science Theater, and one of the anthology-style stories it has is about an evil toy monkey that every time it crashes its cymbals, it kills something. Starts with a fly, works up to a child.
It is one of those things where, like, literally every second something is dying. Like, there's just so many people and things on the planet.
He was just taking the responsibility for those kills every time you're saying he actually wasn't doing it.
And speaking of taking responsibility for kills, is that a chainsaw I see drilling through the wall?
God, I hate that this has become so complacent now, Mikey. We're becoming numb to it.
Here to murder ya! But before we get too far into the murder, Roxy, Mikey, do you ever feel lonely?
Sometimes. But you know what? I watch scary movies when I feel lonely, so I don't have to feel lonely anymore because I'm distracted by watching things or listening to things.
I'm too scared of everything to ever watch a scary movie, but I just feel so alone sometimes. Like, maybe I'm the only one who likes killing people?
I could see that being a problem for you, Pigbot. Yeah, like, I don't like killing people. I've never felt good about it.
What do you mean you've never felt good about it? You've done this before, Mikey?
Well, yeah, I've killed, you know, men who are threatening my life, burglars in my home, like that kind of thing. But I don't take joy in it.
Because I do, and I think I'm the only one. Can you guys tell me about a horror movie, maybe, that features somebody who's all alone? Somebody who's just the only one like them? And maybe this story will make me feel less alone!
Can you think of any horror movies like that, Roxy? Any horror movies that about an individual, lonely person?
Yeah, how about The Girl with All the Gifts from 2016? That's a movie about a girl who feels all alone.
Absolutely, that's a great idea. Pigbot, would you like to hear about The Girl with All the Gifts?
Sure!
This guy's crazy. Okay, great. Roxy, let's you and me talk about The Girl with All the Gifts. What year did you say it was from?
2016, so pretty recent.
What a great year. Let's talk about it. Let's go through The Girl with All the Gifts, starting out with who's in the movie. Our main character, we open up with Melanie, an upbeat and polite young girl who is a neonate, a child born with a craving for blood, like one of the Hungries. The Hungries, of course, this world's version of zombies. But the thing about neonates like Melanie is that they're able to retain their human minds. So Melanie is smart. She loves her teacher slash motherly figure, Miss Justinow. She's a good, cute little person. We love Melanie.
It's true. She is very cute. And then we have Miss Justinow, who's a teacher at the prison school that Melanie is in, and the only one who sees the neonates as actual children. She educates them and shows them kindness.
Next, we've got Dr. Caldwell, who I will be referring to as Glenn Close, because Roxy,
it's valid.
When Glenn Close showed up in this movie, my fucking mind was blown.
Oh,
I was like,
really?
This is not a celebrity movie. I thought this was an actor movie. No, it's a celebrity movie.
She does a great job.
Based on just Glenn Close's appearance.
Yeah, she's very good. She's killing it.
Okay, let's talk about this really quick, because I always refer to this as the Walter White, what's that guy's name? Why am I, Bryan Cranston, the Bryan Cranston problem, where sometimes actors are revered for their performances, but they're kind of just being themselves.
Hmm.
Like, is Glenn Close being good as an actor when she's playing a cold-hearted maniac? Because I think that's the only role she plays, and I think that might just be who she is. What do you think?
I don't think I am learned enough on roles Glenn Close has played to know that she has played anything other than that. So I honestly can't speak to otherwise. I have to look at her IMDb, I guess.
I have been on a journalism movie kick, and I watched a movie from late 80s, early 90s called The Paper. Where Michael Keaton is like an editor at a tabloidy newspaper and Glenn Close is kind of like his rival who's kind of trimming the budget.
Oh.
And I think they're trying to play Glenn Close as like, she's like having an affair. It's kind of sexy. She's kind of like a journalist who like kind of got forced into this budgetary role. Mm. And she just is like not appealing at all. Like it feels like I can't tell if the movie is just not well directed enough to be clear about what kind of person she is, or if it's just that Glenn Close can't play like a sexy heroic character because she's so cold and bitter. All that is to say, Glenn Close is in this movie. She plays Dr. Caldwell, a ruthless doctor trying to find a cure for the hungry disease at any cost. She does not see the neonates as children, but as materials to be used as she sees fit.
Then we have Sergeant Parks, who is a strict military man who's in charge of security at the base and particularly hates the Hungries and neonate children alike. He sees them as basically the same thing.
We got Private Kieran Gallagher, affectionately referred to as Kieran. He is a base soldier who's scared of the Hungries, but comes to see Melanie not as a threat and begins to treat her with kindness.
And then we overall just have, like, the Hungries, this universe of zombies who have been infected with a parasitic fungus. They congregate in groups when they can't move their bodies, and they create a horrifying megastructure with spore pods. Spooky!
And finally, late in the movie, almost too late, some could argue, we meet a group of feral children who have a symbiotic relationship with the fungus. They're neonates, like Melanie, but they grew up in the post-apocalyptic ruins without the influence of adult humans who knew what the world was. They're kind of roaming free.
They
kind of
develop speech.
Their own hierarchy.
Yeah, they're like definitely old enough that they would be talking if they had been schooled or taught what languages. But they do not have the ability to do that. They just screech a lot.
So let's talk about this movie. We'll go through the plot really
quick.
Yeah,
let's get into a plot recap.
With Melanie, the young girl in the prison cell, she's going through her daily routine for prison school. It opens in like a very small, like you don't know what's going on. You're just like in a little cell with this little girl.
Yeah.
And she's got a wheelchair. She sits herself in the wheelchair. She kind of like straps herself in to the extent she can. Multiple armed guards come in, double check her restraints. They treat Melanie with fear. Even though Melanie is very polite, she's just like, hello, Sergeant Kieran.
Yeah, she, like, remembers their names and, like, says, good morning, here's your full name, good morning, full name.
And also, in a line that will become very important to the rest of this movie, I believe it's Sergeant Parks, right, who is going through and banging on the doors and says, get up, you friggin' abortions.
I don't think it's him specifically, but yeah, that is, like, one of the guards saying that is very... It has more meanings than just them being assholes to these kids. There's actually a thing behind that, unfortunately. So anyway, after she's been put into this restraint, we see her in class, where there's multiple children in the same position as Melanie. It's not just her. They're all restrained in wheelchairs, only allowed one free hand so they can write using a pencil and a piece of paper. Miss Justineau is the kind teacher for these children and treats them like actual children. When she pats Melanie on the head for an answer she gives in class, Sergeant Parks busts in and chastises her, and then proceeds to show that the children will turn into bloodthirsty flesh eaters if you bleed near them or get too close and don't have something called blocker gel. Because these zombies, their thing is they're really good at smelling, so if you don't have this gel to mask that you're human, they want to eat you.
This is like a pretty incredible scene where Ms. Justineau has all the students write a story, and as far as we can tell, this is the first time they've ever been asked to create.
Yeah.
And Melanie gives, like, a really sweet story about where, and this is why I was like, oh, they're doing this on purpose. Melanie describes the story as a woman, a beautiful woman, and then they cut to Ms. Justineau, so we know who she's talking about. And she's attacked by a monster, but then the monster is a friggin' abortion.
Yeah.
So she's like, internalized this. It was very cute.
Yeah, and she's only using like what she has in front of you. She doesn't really have the imagination to see much beyond what her situation is, but knows how to like turn it into something. So, yeah.
It's a really good scene, and you really like, this movie is very much about like, it deals with this question of whether Melanie is a child or not. And it is really, really hard to buy into the other side of the argument that she's not. Like, when you see the scene, it's just like, oh, she's a cute little kid who's told a cute little story.
And you see Miss Justineau being, like, moved by it, like, basically to tears because she cares about these kids. And then, you have these jackboot military guys who then show you the reality of the fact that these kids are real children and alive, but also ravenous flesh eaters who want to eat every human they can get their hands on.
It really is a great scene, just like in terms of that 1-2 punch. We get this lovely little story, and then we get the way that the kids turn into zombies. It looks like their jaw breaks.
Yeah,
and their mouths like, get so wide.
It's like a conditioned response or something. It feels so beyond like their desires for ever wanting to actually do it. Like you can tell they don't want to. It's just like a reaction that they have that's beyond their control, which is scary because it's like they're just kids. They're probably scared by that too, or at least, you know, wouldn't want to do that.
Absolutely. So we've got Dr. Caldwell, who, listen, I'm just going to call her Glenn Close from now on.
Sure.
That is what all of my notes refer to her as Glenn Close. She is Glenn Close. Glenn Close is trying to find a cure for this hungry disease. She uses the children in the base as a resource to try and make one of these vaccines. Now, Glenn Close does this by harvesting the neonates' brains and killing them. Now, Melanie is very smart and has garnered attention from Dr. Caldwell, who is Glenn Close. But eventually, Melanie finds herself on the chopping block for that brain harvesting surgery.
The thing is, too, she does it on purpose. Like, this is something that shows how smart she is. Like, Glenn Close asks her questions, like, at the end of the day to test if her brain is still working correctly or if she's devolved into the fungus taking over her, and asks her to name a number between one and however many students there are. But Melanie figures that out. Like, Glenn Close doesn't tell her the number is the number of students. Melanie figures it out when one of the numbers she gives is a kid who doesn't show up to class the next day. And so then she says her own number because she doesn't want to, I guess, force one of her classmates into that situation, I guess.
I had not put that together. That's a good call. Yeah, I thought it was just that she was arbitrarily picking numbers and had just like, wouldn't you know it, had picked her own number.
Which is why Caldwell, she's like, are you sure you mean that number? And she's like, yeah. So she understands that she was picking herself on purpose, too, which is, like, very interesting.
That's a great call. It's a great catch, Rox.
But so after preparing for the surgery, Miss Justineau bursts into the room to try and talk Dr. Caldwell out of killing Melanie. However, it does not work. But the base is attacked and overrun by Hungries. So the surgery does end up happening. Melanie, Justineau, Glenn Close, Private Gallagher, and Sergeant Parks all manage to escape into a vehicle along with a few other military men. They restrain and muzzle Melanie to avoid her being a threat to them while in close quarters.
And I want to call out this scene really quick. This is exactly how scary things emerge in my nightmares. There's this shot of, first of all, Glenn Close has a nurse by her side who is played by the lady who plays like the landlord's daughter in Spider-Man 2.
What?
Who's like making Peter Parker all these like cookies. Her name's like Ulsa or something.
Oh.
Played by her. But there's this incredible shot where like they hear the alarm. They're like, oh, great. Zombies are coming. And they just casually like flip a switch and the shutters start to lower.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one of these shots where the camera is just still, but you can see down this long hallway somebody just sprinting.
Yeah.
And it's exactly how whenever monsters appear in my dreams, they appear. I never get jump scared in my nightmares. It's always just like something is coming towards me and there's nothing I can do about it. It's just like it is the feeling of death incarnate. It is on its way. This sprinter runs up and just dives head first through the window and starts gnawing on Ulsa from Spider-Man 2. And God bless. It's so scary. It's so upsetting.
It is. I mean, they have this whole sequence where when they get above ground, because like that lab is underground, when they get above ground, it's just like complete chaos with like all of the military men and other people at the base just being fell upon by these zombies who are just running at them with everything they got. It's very scary. And actually, Melanie saves Miss Justineau by attacking one of the zombies very brutally. So she's like covered in blood by the time she gets to the car. And they're like, you can't bring that in here. And she's like, shut up, just let her in.
So now we got the group on the run. They stop for water, but one of the military guys messes up, makes too much noise, and causes the gang to be overrun by Hungries. They lose all the military guys except for Sergeant Parks and Private Kieran Gallagher. Their truck is also rendered mobile when the fuel line is damaged. This forces the party to go on foot through London to try and make it to another military base.
So this part made me so mad, Mikey. These guys who, like, every decision that they've been trained to do to keep them from getting noticed, all of the dudes have their suppressors on except for one dude. It's so stupid. And he's like, oh, sorry, fuck. It's like, do you not care about being alive? What is wrong with you? It was very dumb.
That's funny.
Anyway, using blocker gel, the party is able to soundlessly move through London and a sea of dormant Hungries, making them mostly invisible. The Hungries have an elevated sense of smell, so the gel protects them for the time being. They're able to find an abandoned hospital to take shelter in, and Caldwell tells Melanie that second-generation Hungries, the neonates, meaning Melanie and her classmates, were discovered as babies, which sounds cute at first, but then you find out that they killed their infected pregnant mothers by eating their mothers' bodies and organs to survive and get out of the womb on their own. Hence why they're called friggin' abortions by the military people, because they encountered this horrifying sight, which I can only imagine.
And I do want to flag this scene. I we'll talk about it in a second, but this is very much the goddess moment where Melanie is finally alone with Glenn Close and just asks point blank, what am I?
Yep.
And it's intercut with Miss Justinow, like, pacing through the school with a gun in a way that, like we'll dive into it in a second, but I just want to, like, remember this scene. This is really the scene on which this movie hinges, I would argue. Sergeant Parks' team is the one who found all of these neonites after they had eaten their way out of the mother. The horror of seeing such a thing is why he's so unfriendly towards Melanie, you gotta understand. Meanwhile, Private Gallagher is being kind towards Melody. They're spending time together. He sees that she's not a threat. Miss Justinow finds Melanie some new clothes. They're kind of, they're hanging out at this school, right?
There's like a play area, school area within the hospital that they're in.
Got it.
And, I made a note here about Melanie's shirt that says, Born to Dance.
Born to Dance. It's a very cool shirt.
It's so funny.
And when you think about it, she kind of was born to dance.
Yeah, you know.
That's not true.
In a way, maybe.
The next morning, the group finds out that they have been surrounded by Hungries and are pinned down. So Melanie volunteers to find a solution. Because the Hungries ignore one of their own. Right? She can just run through the Hungries and not be attacked.
Yeah.
So Melanie is on the case.
Melanie explores the world on her own without restraints for the first time and finds abandoned houses with all kinds of objects and stuff in them, which she is very curious about. However, she is very hungry and needs to eat. So in order to not attack the humans, she ends up finding a stray cat and eats it off screen, thankfully, because I love cats and that was sad. I get she needs to survive, but rough watch. And then, in order to save the humans who are got the base surrounded by these Hungries, she finds a stray dog and uses it as bait to have it run and the Hungries follow after to get them away from the hospital. So she has officially saved the rest of the team.
Mission accomplished. On the move again, the team finds a horrifying sight. Many long dead and decaying hungry bodies have congregated around the BT Tower, one of the tallest structures still standing in the city. The bodies have merged and grown together to create this huge superstructure with dangling seed pods. These pods are the next stage of the fungus, as Glenn Close explains to us. If these pods open, the hungry virus will become airborne and will officially end what remains of mankind. Roxy, this was the funniest moment in the movie to me.
Funniest moment? Okay, how?
They find the seed pods and somebody goes, what happens when they open? And Glenn Close, in all seriousness, goes, the end of the world. And I was like, motherfucker, this world is over. Like, yeah. It is the end of the world. We have gotten there. It was the funniest. It was like raising the stakes a half notch. Like, get out of here with this. It's the end of the world.
Well, for her, it certainly is.
I guess.
However, as Glenn Close described, the sieve pod design makes it kind of hard for it to open. In fact, she wagers that it would take fire or a flood or something for them to open, which means for now, at least, they're safe from this giant seed pod tower, world-ending tower. Team finds an abandoned mobile lab with solar power to hunker down for the time being. Sergeant Gallagher goes on a supply run to find food, but is unfortunately tricked into a trap set by feral children, who eat him alive. Melanie, who is also out on a supply run of her own because she has had too much time close to humans she needs to eat, ran into these feral children earlier, but didn't realize what they had in mind for Sergeant Gallagher, Kieran, her friend, until it was too late, so she was unable to save him.
This was another truly horrifying scene for me where Kieran is in like a... First of all, does go into a gas station and finds pornography magazines. And
he's also led by a trail. Like, they lead a trail of, like, canned goods to under this gap in the door. So, like, these kids are smart and they know how to trap living, thinking humans. But, yeah.
And that's why they knew that the pornography magazine would be the one that stops him.
I guess it was a distraction.
Roxy, I wrote this down, and I'm not proud of this. What if it was cum that opened up the seed pods? Hey, just as likely.
Well, it would be a better delivery method, I guess, because it would for humanity to survive, because it'd be a little more difficult, I suppose.
Yeah, at least someone's having a good time. Kieran is not beating off, even though there's absolutely a scene where it's framed and looks as though he is. But he turns and sees one of these feral children, like, holding a rat for him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so... This is... I honestly couldn't decide which was the scariest scene in the movie, if it was this or the other one, because it just felt like this guy is dead. Like, this is
the story version. And he's just, like...
Exactly.
Such a nice guy who you don't want to see killed, and...
And there's just nothing, like, he can do about it.
These children, like, what's going on? Like, he doesn't want to hurt these children. To the point that, right. like, he has a grenade that he could pull as they're, like, killing him and chooses not to because he doesn't, I guess he doesn't want to kill them because he's just realizing they're kids.
Yeah, what's the point, really?
I guess, yeah.
But, like, it does feel like the narrative version of the long hallway that the zombie sprints down, just in the sense that, like, this thing is happening and there's nothing we can do. Like, the scariest moment early in the movie was it happening physically, and then in this movie it happens emotionally. It's just like this is all happening.
It's rough.
Whew. So Melanie is not in time to save Kieran, but she is in time to save her beloved Miss Justinow and Sergeant Parks from the feral children. She does this by beating the shit out of the feral kid's leader.
Yeah.
And then she yells and screams at them.
Kills him.
Just ravages this guy. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she has like a baseball bat and just like beats him to death. She also like uses handcuffs, I think, to like keep him immobile as well.
Yes. These are handcuffs that Sergeant Parks had been using on Melanie this entire time. So it really is like an articulation of her becoming the master of both worlds. She's both the master of the human world and the feral world in a way that feels very cool. But it's something we haven't talked about yet. There are a lot of moments in this movie where, like, we see Melanie early in the movie chained to a wheelchair. We love her and we're just like, oh, I just want this girl to get free. We love her so much. Mm-hmm. And then she every once in a while gets to just like cut loose and beat the shit out of people or devour military people. And it's so fucking satisfying. This scene is definitely like Miss Justinow and Sergeant Parks are like, oh, God, what is this monster we have? But I was just like, fuck yeah, Melanie, like beat the shit out of
her. Well, to an extent, like they're not scared of her after that, like... I think Sergeant Parks, he kind of, when he sees that she's protecting him now, because that's the whole thing where it's like, they're the ones with guns, they're supposed to be protecting her from the Hungries, this is her protecting them from these feral children, from these Hungries,
that's
that like, they are shocked, but it's like, they still go with her to escape after she proves that she is the strongest among all of these feral children.
It's definitely played as a joke, but it feels darker in context where Melanie says something like after she kills the leader of the feral children, she wants to establish herself as the leader and that everybody's afraid of her. So she's like, pretend to be afraid of me and then continues growling.
Yep.
And Parks just kind of goes like, pretend, which really like,
yep.
I thought was going in a darker direction than the movie ends up going. But yeah, they really don't address that anymore.
Yeah. So back at the lab base, it's revealed that Dr. Caldwell is dying of sepsis. She got injured earlier but didn't tell anyone. So her time is limited right now. She's going to attempt to use the last of her strength to dissect Melanie with her shaky hand and find a cure somehow. However, she is unable to overpower Melanie, so instead she tries to convince Melanie to self-sacrifice, that if she did this, she would be saving Miss Justino. Just go ahead and lay on the table and let me cut you open, kid.
Melanie sees through it, though. She's just about to comply, but then she's like, wait a minute, I'm not a mistake, I'm not an experiment. I'm just the new kind of person. My kind is every bit as valid as humanity now, so why should I have to die for humans? Me and my generation are the future of the world. So, Melanie escapes the lab. She uses fire to free the spore pods and usher in a new generation. She just burns it down.
Yeah, she just makes that choice, which could be seen as, I don't know, man. Is it a mercy to just kill humanity outright, or is it selfish, or what? Like, it doesn't feel...
I think it is.
What, selfish or a mercy?
No, I think it's great. I think it's totally the right move.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, you totally believe why she would do this, even though we are humans watching this and being like, well, we'd be dead, but no, we get it. So Caldwell chases Melanie, but is killed by feral children in the street, which I think is a pretty fitting death for her. A lady who was killing and chopping up kids gets killed by the very kid she was chopping up. Sergeant Parks, who has softened a bit towards Melanie over time, tries to find and help Melanie, thinking she's lost somewhere out there alone. However, he becomes infected by the spore pods that are now in the air. He arrives to find Melanie and sees that she is the one responsible for releasing the spore pods into the air.
God bless. In his final moments, Sergeant Parks tells Melanie he doesn't resent her. He's resigned to his fate. He hands Melanie a gun and asks her to end his life while he's still human, and says that he hopes Melanie figures out a future for herself. Melanie feels condescended to. That's not true.
No.
It does feel condescending. Melanie is upset by this because she did like Sergeant Parks.
Yeah,
he is very
feels
much
very earnest when he says this. Because he had a daughter. He had like a family. He had a wife and a daughter who died. So you can tell that, you know, he's someone who was a father. And while Melanie was never like a, you know, felt like his child, I think he can understand like how hard it was for her to go through what she's going through and be like, yeah, the next generation is supposed to take over what we left behind.
And he has a pretty nice little arc. He is the guy who is a dick, who's calling them friggin' abortions, but he has his moments where he, you know, teaches Melanie about the world, teaches her about hollow point bullets, grows to like each other. And at the end of the whole deal, Melanie honors Parks' requests, shoots him in the face, puts him out of his misery.
It's true, she does. Meanwhile, Miss Justino had been knocked out by Dr. Caldwell during all of this, so she wakes up in the aftermath of everything. She's luckily safe in the sealed mobile lab and watches the spores fall, knowing the implications that humanity is doomed.
Months later, Miss Justino is possibly the last living human. She's trapped in the sealed mobile lab so as to avoid the spores in the air, but she does continue to teach. She teaches these feral children with the help of Melanie, who's keeping them in line. They also go and bring all the neonates from the prison.
Yes, that's right. Yep, yep.
So we don't know what the future holds, but Melanie smiles as the class goes on, prepared for a new future to take place. That's the girl with all the gifts.
The girl with all the gifts.
She has a lot of gifts, and the only she has one gift. She's the hybrid. She's the master of both worlds.
Yeah.
That's all.
She's really smart, which I love the way that they showed, you know, like in subtle ways how she is without, you know, having a character come right out and say it. It's through her actions. And yeah, I think she's like a little bit older than some of the kids too, at least some of the feral children. So she's got that going for her too. But yeah, she's keeping the kids in line behind the glass, and then Justino is trapped behind the glass for the rest of her life, maybe just teaching them.
Yeah. But there is something like, so the core relationship of this movie is Miss Justino and Melanie. Mm-hmm. It's student teacher. It's truly
kind of parent child a little too.
Yes.
In a way.
And then we have Glenn Close, who is, first of all, I thought for sure. Roxy, I was 100% sure when we first meet Glenn Close, because at first we're just seeing her through like a window in a door in Melanie's prison cell. Like Melanie's looking at her through a window. And I thought, like, oh, Glenn Close had an extra day She came and filmed all of her scenes against a green screen. We don't even see her from the waist down. I was like, she doesn't even have to show up in pants. I thought for sure Glenn Close was going to immediately die. But no, they paid for Glenn Close. She is like in the movie. I thought for sure we were going to get a little cameo and then she's gone. But she kind of functions as like the bad cop, for lack of a better term. Like we have Glenn Close and Miss Justinow, who are both parental figures, but Miss Justinow is concerned with loving Melanie and Glenn Close is concerned with Melanie's purpose. And it does feel like two opposing viewpoints of parenting.
Yeah, and I guess being obsessed with Melanie's purpose, even more so, it's more like what she can get out of her purpose. Like, Glenn Close just sees the kids as tools. She doesn't see them as individuals whatsoever. She's not even going to entertain the idea. And she hand waves a lot of that with just being like, well, I'm saving the human race, so it's justified, isn't it? She never once considers like, oh yeah, this is like a new evolution of humanity. Like, some of us just found a way to coexist and thrive. So much evolution has taken place in weird, bizarre ways to coexist with new things that happen in that way. In, like, even smaller ecosystems than, like, this whole world thing. Because, like, we don't know what's going on in other parts of the world. We're just in a small section in London for all of this. And we can assume there's probably neonates all over the world who have evolved and found ways to survive through all of this. And maybe even pockets of humanity who kept in bunkers or something. Who knows?
I hope not.
But yeah, she uses it as a justification to just be like, well, I'm saving the world, so everything I do, it's fine. It's the right thing to do. How can you not believe that what I'm doing is the right thing?
And this movie gets into, there's one little scene that happens when they first get to the hospital slash schoolhouse between Sergeant Parks and Karen, where they're talking about this like really interesting idea that were like, they're like, do you think I'm a good person? And Parks says something along the lines of like, I've never met a good person or a bad person. Like, people just do what they do. They just do what's in them. And it's like this movie, it's like a point of view that I don't agree with, but I think is articulated really well. I feel like this idea that we're all just like acting to survive is really valid and kind of like, this feels like a movie where it feels like this filmmaker, rather, or this writer, or whoever's in charge of this movie, just feels like, let's strip away the morality. Like, they're almost uninterested, like, is Glenn Close good or is Glenn Close bad? It's like, she's just doing what she needs to do. Melanie's just doing what she needs to do. Miss Justin now is just doing what she needs to do. And God bless it, it works out for some, it works, doesn't work out for others. It just feels like almost this natural evolution just progresses.
But it does that.
And Melanie happens to come out on the right end.
Yeah, it does that while also not, like, sacrificing kindness to an extent with, like, Melanie only gets to where she does because she cares about, like, the people who are around her and doesn't want them to be hurt. Because she planned for all of them to be in the sealed thing so they wouldn't be affected by the spores. But only Miss Justino, who has gotten knocked out, like, she never intended to kill Parks. When he shows up, she's like, no, you were supposed to be in the sealed thing with everybody else. Like, what are you doing here? And then he just accepts his fate.
It does get us into, like, this movie's point of view that, like, the only real good way to live is symbiotically. They hint at it a little bit, like Glenn Close talks about
it. Yeah, like working together, I guess.
Yeah. The idea of little tiny birds that clean hippopotamus's teeth. Like, the birds fly in, they use their long beaks to clean the teeth, so the hippopotamuses are less likely to get infected in their mouths, the bird gets food, therefore the hippo does right to not eat the bird. That feels like the closest thing to this movie's point of view of morality. Like, it's together, it's by working within our individual context, it's by putting our teachers in laboratories and rounding up the feral children, that we're going to survive. We're going to survive by getting through this together.
Yeah, and I think it's by using people's strengths and weaknesses and not, like, demonizing them for it, just working with them. Which I've seen the comparison where it's kind of like, this could also kind of flow into the idea of how, you know, neurotypical kids are handled in regular society, how they're just like, you better fall in line with what's normal or fuck you, instead of just being like, oh, they just learn differently, so we'll help them learn differently. Like, there's nothing wrong with just, you know, adapting things like that to serve other people and to include folks who aren't, like, the same as everyone else. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It might take some extra time, but it's still worth it and valid.
I would argue, like, you're exactly right. It's not that, but it almost, like, is making the point that, like, there are hidden rewards to this, too. It's not just a selfless thing to help people, even though that's maybe worth it in and of itself. But, like, we're going to get a better society if we figure out how to help more people learn better. Like, that's a really positive and, like, I think ultimately a very sweet message.
Yeah, like, uplifting everybody, making sure everybody is, like, safe and cared for, it just makes a better society as a whole. And when you have people who are greedy, who only see themselves as the benefactors, that's when, you know, things start to slip, when they start to fall, when people start to suffer just because other people decided to be selfish.
Well,
which,
again, I would
everyone.
Argue that the way to convince people of that, like, if somebody's decided, like, I don't care, like, I'm a Wall Street guy, I just want to make money. Like, you're not going to get through to that guy by saying, like, well, what have you tried being kind? He'll be like, no, fuck you, I want to make money.
Exactly.
But you can still appeal to that guy by saying, like, you will make more money if you help people.
No,
like,
truly.
I really,
there are benefits to it.
It's one of those, like, the solar power debate isn't about, like, is it good for the environment? Like, the society's decided they don't give a shit about that. The solar power debate's going to be one when we're like, it's going to be cheaper to use solar power. Like, there's going to be benefits for
you. It's this, I think the saying is penny wise, dollar foolish, where it's like, I just want to make like 10 pennies right now instead of on the whole, if I plan this smartly, I'll make like a billion times that just by being smarter and doing things more sustainably. But it's like, no, you've got the old guard who only cares about getting theirs really quickly and doesn't seem to understand that, you know, you'll make more money if you don't be so stupid, right?
Yeah.
They don't care because they just see the big dollar sign right now.
Yeah. We should be showing The Girl with All the Gifts to more Wall Street dudes.
We really should be.
Like it. I did want to come back to this goddess moment.
Okay.
There's a moment where the group finds this hospital that I could have sworn was a school, but it probably isn't. They get to this school and they chain Melanie to a radiator. Glenn Close is just hanging out. And Sergeant Parks is like, Kieran, you go north. I'll go east. Miss Justinow, you go west. And they do this really, really interesting scene where this is the moment where Melanie and Glenn Close, like I wrote down, what do these two have to talk about? He's going to chat about. Mm-hmm. But she asks, this is where she asks, like, what am I? What's going on with me? Explain my birth. And where Glenn Close tells her about the neonates and about how when we dissect you, we can see that you are hungry, but also you act like a person. So we can use you to make the world better. And all the while, we are seeing Miss Justinow pace through this school hospital with a gun, and she's like searching, she's looking. And I remember thinking, like, why are we seeing Miss Justin now here? Why do we, like, they're clearly trying to draw some sort of parallel between them. And this is where it becomes very clear that we have good cop, bad cop. But it's such an interesting way of framing it in that Glenn Close's objective is to save humanity, while Miss Justinow's objective is to find and kill hungry. So Glenn Close wants to save everybody, but we hate her. While Miss Justinow wants to kill something specific and we love her. Like, it just felt like an interesting frame for how Miss Justinow is hunting but for love, whereas Glenn Close is innovating for destruction. Like, it just feels like such an interesting flip on what we would traditionally associate with good and evil.
I think it's kind of similar to the trolley problem in a way as well, where it's like Miss Justinow wants to save a single child, who is Melanie right here, somebody that she can tangibly save. But Glenn Close is thinking, oh, well, I can save everyone, but I don't care who gets hurt in the process. So she doesn't care about what she has to do to get to her endpoint, which, by the way, she doesn't have, like, a cure. She doesn't have a formula of any kind. She's just still trying to figure it out. If she had, like, maybe a guaranteed cure, maybe you could have more of a discussion over what to do about it. But so far, all she's done is been unable to succeed with that. So it shows that, like, with Miss Justinow, she's just trying to save the people in front of her because that's all she tangibly can do. And that's all you realistically can do in the moment.
And I think this movie is arguing, and I probably tend to agree, that that's all you should do. That's what it is to be alive, right?
Well,
you're a little bird, you pick out
all we're individually, like, capable of. Like, being able to come up with this cure and stuff would be great if it was even possible, but it's this intangible, like, what-if scenario that has, like, no actual grounding in, like, proof. So it's like, why would you hedge all your bets on that right now? And she does it because she's dying. She literally has no more time, so she's like, just let me dissect you and I'll figure it out, I swear.
Let me push you a little bit on this, Roxy.
Okay.
This is something that comes up with The Last of Us a lot, which this movie is a dollar store Last of Us.
It's very similar, yes. Came out after the games, I will say, but it's different, but very similar, yes.
The Last of Us has the same issue that this movie has, where the main character, the adorable little girl that we have fallen in love with and are following, has to die to make a cure. And a lot of people have made that same argument for The Last of Us. Like, we don't know if that cure was going to work. And Joel doesn't know if that was going to work. Joel is the main character.
You find notes that literally say they've killed dozens of children and other people with the same immunity and never found a way to make it work. So,
but so here's the thing. I've heard numerous times from Neil Druckmann, the guy who wrote The Last of Us and went on to make the show, where he was like, in his head, canonically, and I think this is the way more interesting take and the thing I want to be true and want to ask you what would happen to your opinion if this was true in this movie, Neil Druckmann says the cure would have worked. Like, full stop, that would have worked. We would save humanity. So it's not like it really is the trolley problem then. It is, would you kill a little girl who you love to save humanity? So, all that is to say, if Glenn Close was right, if Glenn Close knew, oh, I have to cut out this brain, I put the brain key in this lock, and then I have the cure, does that change how you think about Glenn Close?
So I'll only talk about it in the context of this movie and not with The Last of Us and Neil Druckmann, because I'll go on a long-ass tangent if I let myself go down that slippery slope. I'd say that Melanie makes the best choice for herself in that moment, which is that she doesn't want to die, and there's this whole new society of children that exists now that have a future. And in order to save humans, who majority seem to view them as monsters, like, some of them can coexist. We've seen examples of that with Miss Justineau, and Sergeant Parks came around, and then we've got Kieran. And Glenn Close is doing what she's doing and views the children as she does because of, like, the position she's in. So I think it's not worth dooming the entirety of humanity, but at the same time, I think that Melanie, being the one making that choice, she makes the best choice for herself, whether the cure would have been real or not. She was given the autonomy to make her own choice, and that's what she chose to do. So I'll get behind it, and I can see, like, yeah, it's not fair to, like, doom that entire new civilization of these children who have learned to coexist and evolve as well. Especially when, like, the planet is the way it is now. Even if Melanie had not released those spores, it was only a matter of time. And, like, what are you going to do? Try and get rid of all of those somehow without getting bitten to death by Hungries? Like,
you could try burning those spores.
And then they'd, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, like, if that's just how it is there, think about how it is all over the world. Like, the world has completely changed. There's another movie. God, what is the one? The one that I Am Legend was based off of, which is about, like, vampire monsters.
Oh, Blazing Saddles. Oh,
yeah, of course. You know, Blazing Saddles. No, it wasn't that. Where, like, vampires take over, and then there's no humans left except for, like, one or two just pockets of individuals. But the new normal is now, like, these vampire folks who run over the landscape now. So, like, that's how it is now. The new normal is these kids who have been chosen through evolution, you know, to survive. So humanity is surviving to an extent. They're just changed. They're just a little bit different.
Absolutely. No, it's at the end of this movie, it becomes very clear. And the heroic choice that Melanie makes is to say, like, no, I'm part of the next generation. And the point of the next generation is to kill and eat the last generation.
Or at least not
mythologically, metaphorically.
To not, like, suffer for the generation that came before. Like, there's no reason why you need to put up with the bullshit that came before you has caused to happen.
Yeah. No, yeah. Exactly. Like, yep. It's our time. The truth is, the world has gotten to a point where it is our time. You're exactly right. It was a delaying the inevitable move to make a vaccine for Miss Justineau. Like, children should not be sacrificing themselves for parents. Parents should be sacrificing themselves for children. That's the correct way for societies and for humanity to function. That's the way people continue. Like, and it's like a really interesting choice for Melanie to just be like, the right kind of selfish to just say, like, no, I'm the one here. I can make this decision. Glenn Close, you're a villain.
Yeah. And honestly, in the broader sense, I don't know how much she's even taking into this. Like, just like I said, the entire landscape of the world is like rejecting humanity. You cannot survive. Even if the cure is made, humans would just get,
yeah,
like infected again, because now it's mutated to another stage.
Right.
Yeah.
You do so much better to just be like, okay, these are the circumstances I'm in. I'm going to react to that, as opposed to reacting to how I wish the circumstances were.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great if everybody could coexist, but that happens to be not how the world works in this current movie state. I did want to talk a little bit, yes, about how, like, this is technically based on a book, but the guy who wrote the book was writing the screenplay to the movie and this book, like, in tandem. Mm-hmm. So there are things that are very faithfully portrayed on screen. I have not read the book, so I will say that up front, but I did a little investigating to kind of, like, figure out what the book was like and some of the differences. And a lot of people who have read the book will be like, well, the book was better, even though they are so similar. And I think that's because you get, like, the inner thoughts from the main character in the book in a way that you don't get in the movie. Mm-hmm. They changed a couple, like, small little details around about, like, characters. And then also there's this entirely other faction of, like, raiders, essentially called, like, Junkers, that aren't in the movie at all, which I think is a good choice because there is no time to deal with those. And I think the movie is very clear without adding these details. I don't think it detracts from the movie, personally. Having never read the book.
I see the point of, like, the feral children, but even that felt to me, like, at the end of the movie, it's like, oh, we're introducing this other new idea? It feels like kind of a stuffed movie. And so, yeah, I am glad that we didn't get another faction.
You have more time with a book to include things like that. But a movie has a set runtime that you can't include everything. And I think what they chose to sacrifice for making it clearer or more succinct, I think they chose the right things to edit out. From what I've seen. So yeah, I think that was good. And also it's just kind of interesting that, you know, the guy who wrote the book worked on the screenplay. We see this in a couple other instances. I think it was The Exorcist this way as well. The guy who wrote the book.
Oh, was it? No, I don't know.
I think he might have helped work with the screenplay, but it's cool to be able to
see that.
What
I know about is Aaron Sorkin writing The Social Network at the same time as a book about Mark Zuckerberg was being written.
Oh, yeah. And then we see things like with, we were literally talking about Neil Druckmann. He worked as the writer on The Last of Us and was also working on the TV series with the director who was adapting it as well. So it's neat.
I can't necessarily speak to The Exorcist, just because I hadn't really thought about that in terms of, like, book to movie.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of The Last of Us, and maybe even, you know, having only seen the movie of The Girl with All the Gifts.
Uh-huh.
I would almost rather have a second set of eyes on a story. Like, I kind of like the idea of somebody else coming to your story and saying, like, here's what I'm seeing. Like, that almost feels like I'm going to say a copy of a copy. That's not fair. But, like, you have the same storytelling blind spots that you don't see. So then to adapt it again, theoretically, those blind spots would show up just as much. I think I kind of, on the whole, would rather have a new guy come in and say, cut. This is stupid. Cut this.
Yeah. Well, I'd also say that because you are good at writing a novel doesn't mean you're good at writing a screenplay. Like, that's an entirely other art form. So I'd say that, like, unless you have written screenplays before and stuff, yeah, you shouldn't be able to just wholesale cloth steamroll things. It should be done in conjunction. And a lot of these times it will be, like, the director or creator of the new thing, whether it's a movie or TV series, will, like, just work with the original creator to adapt it. And then you don't see, like, writing credits from that original creator, just that they were involved in the project. But somebody else entirely is, like, writing the screenplay for each episode or the movies and stuff.
Feels like the move.
Yeah, exactly. Where I think it's, like, it's good to have the original creators involved. But, like, yeah, unless they've been doing screenplays. And, like, you should be probably co-writing it anyway to have, like, a writer's room at that point. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you had, Mikey?
The only thing is, I did write down, and I don't remember why, my very last note for this movie is, what if Miss Justinow starts a record label? I did watch this movie very late at night.
Okay.
and was getting sleepy by the end of it. But what if she started a record label? I don't know why I wrote that.
Maybe you thought her voice would be really good on a soundtrack or something. I don't know. Would she be managing it, or is she the
exactly
singer?
She would not be singing on the records, but I think what I'm hitting on here is that Miss Justinow clearly has an eye for talent.
Okay.
She saw something in Melanie, And I think she could see something in those kids and pick out who is ready to be a pop star.
Yeah, especially if, you know, starting from a young age, she'll be able to identify how good they'd be early on. They can have a long singing career in the post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
How wonderful. I mean, the last line of the movie is there will be lots of time, right? So, yeah, there's lots of time to develop your singing career and talent.
A lot of time to figure out what we want to do here. Is it pop? Is it R&B? Is it kind of a country hybrid?
You'd also be like the first pop star in the post-apocalypse. So that's gotta earn you some points across the radio.
You can do, because all music has been erased, Miss Just Now can do what that guy, you know the movie Yesterday where a guy wakes up and the Beatles never existed?
So I haven't seen it, but the concept, yes, I know. It's wild.
It is absolutely the movie I have referenced the most while also having never seen it. Miss Just Now can do that with every song. She can take songs from The Band. She can take songs from Britney Spears and just say she wrote them. That's an opportunity.
Yeah, what if the only things to survive the apocalypse was like a kids' bop music CD? She's like, okay, I know what I'm going to do with this.
Our most beautiful song, the national anthem, All the Small Things.
So, Mikey, do you have a question for me?
Big time. Roxy, we see throughout this movie, Miss Just Now finds Melanie. This is, for all intents and purposes, her child. She wants to protect her. If we're having a zombie apocalypse, what's most important to you? What are you trying to protect?
Well, of course, I would say my parents, which I feel like is a no-brainer for me. And also my cat, because guess what? My cat has a condition called cerebellar hypoplasia, which means he can't run or jump very well. I need to be carrying him. I can't trust him to get through there. We've already seen that Melanie, who is a kind child, will not waste any time devouring a cat. So I don't want to see that happening to my cat.
Yeah, even the kindest, sweetest soul is devouring cats. Like, you really have to make that your mission.
Yeah. So
Roxy, you need to get one of those like Luke Skywalker backpacks that he put Yoda in.
Yes.
So you can just always have your cat with you and just his little cat head can be poking out, giving you advice on the Force.
Exactly. Perfect. What about you, Mikey? Who would you choose to protect?
It's interesting you say who.
Okay, what then?
I would find physical copies of three television shows.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Number one, Lost.
Okay. That one I knew for sure.
Number two, Community.
Oh, okay. Can I try number and guess three. The third one before you do it?
You can. You're not going to get it, but go ahead.
Sopranos?
Sopranos is a much better answer. Oh. Okay, four. three is The Sopranos. Okay. Sopranos is the best show of all time. And four is Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. And Roxy, I say that only because it's the show I'm watching right now.
Okay, yep. No, that tracks.
But because, like, people are going to die. It happens. Bummer. I'll miss you. But people are going to die anyway. I can grieve. I can get over it. If we lose...
Preserving art. Yeah, preserving art.
We have to start all over. So I can at least take those four television shows and use Lost, Sopranos, and Community as of examples of what to do. And The Newsroom, example of kind of what not to do a lot of times.
You can show it to the Ferrell kids and teach them how to write TV shows. You'll be the biggest exactly. TV producer, and Miss Just Now will be the biggest movie or music producer in the post-apocalypse. You guys
we
can
will
collab.
Run the city.
Yeah. You're going to run the world, Mikey.
Me and Miss Just Now doing that entourage thing where we go on the roof of a building and look over Los Angeles just like, we run this city. But yeah, my answer is TV, and it's summed up in those four shows. The four shows to do, or the three shows to do, and a fourth show. You do want a little contrast. You don't want to take only the best shows of all time. You want a show that stumbles a little bit, a show that, you know, takes itself way too seriously. Just so you have a kind of an example to really show you how great The Sopranos is.
All right, so we have now gotten to the rating portion of this movie review. Analysis, whatever. On a scale of 1 to 5 thumbs, because we've got 2 thumbs of our own to vote with, and then a big box of thumbs for the remaining 3, should we want to give it a 5 out of 5. How many thumbs would you rate this movie, Mikey?
I'm going to give it 3 thumbs up.
3 thumbs up. All right.
Listen, I like this movie a lot. I think it's interesting and fun, but like, It's honestly a similar problem I have with The Last of Us and why I love Resident Evil so much more than The Last of Us. I don't love an environment that's already hopeless.
Hmm.
I don't like feeling that there's nothing to fight for, that there's nothing worth saving. Like, it's just harder for me to get passionate about. Like, that's more an aesthetic choice than like a referendum on these kind of movies. But yeah, it just like very early on, I was like, great, we've got prison and now we're going to break out where there's monsters and plants. There's plants growing over. I was like, all right. But it is a great movie. This kid, whoever's playing Melanie, this actress,
she's
incredible.
So good.
This is an incredible performance.
She's amazing.
It's one of the funnest, hopeless movies I've ever seen. So three thumbs up. How are you feeling on it?
I gave it a 4.5, Mikey.
Wow. Thought, you loved it.
Yeah, I love this movie. I thought it was very good. And like Melanie's decision at the end totally is what kind of got it there. Like, I enjoyed my time leading up to it, but when she makes that choice and then you see the ending, which does have like this new generation learning and growing, and then like the final line of we've got lots of time, because they do. They've got plenty of time to make this world their own now and improve upon it. And it ends like on a sunny day as well, where I felt like there is like a hopeful future, even though everything has changed.
That's true.
And even though if I was in this situation, I would be dead or was about to die from airborne spores, which sucks. But like, I can respect Melanie's choice here and seem like the best of a bad choice. Time she made it. So,
I get it.
Yeah. And overall, just I think this movie is good. It endears you towards characters like even with like Sergeant Parks. I expected to hate him throughout. He has like kind of an arc, or at least you see him more. And like Glenn Close's character, it's fine to just be kind of irredeemably just doing your thing.
Yeah.
And she does it well. She's the way she is. And Miss Just Know is just a great character as well. I think overall it was just very enjoyable. So if you haven't read this or watched this already, I would recommend it. And maybe I should be reading the book. I know it won't be too much different, but it'd be neat to kind of see how they filled in on some of the little extra bits here and there.
This is a story that I could see doing a little better as a book, just because like this main character is so affable and lovable. Like, and a book gives you the opportunity to just spend more time with her. You're just hanging out in her head.
To know more of what she's going through. Yeah,
I could see it being a great book too.
All right. So we usually do a palate cleanser on these because, you know, we've talked about some of the good points and hopeful points, but this is also overall a scary horror movie where bad things happen to people. So how about we give a palate cleanser recommendation? What, like, movie, book, TV show, you know, I don't know, concert, anything you've been or done or watched lately, Mikey, that is the overall entertainment experience that you consider the opposite of the movie we just watched?
Well, Roxy, I did just talk a little bit about The Newsroom. I'm not going to reference The Newsroom specifically, but I am going to talk about another Aaron Sorkin jam.
Oh?
A Few Good Men. Have you ever seen A Few Good Men, Roxy?
No, I actually haven't. What is this? Is this a movie?
Yes, this is Tom Cruise as a naval lawyer and Jack Nicholson as a naval officer. And it hinges on this event where, like, as a training exercise, it's like almost a hazing sort of exercise.
Oh.
They have what's called a code red, where the naval recruits break in and they beat up and torment a young naval recruit.
What the fuck?
And it's like it's a hazing thing, but it's like to toughen them up, right?
Oh god.
And what happens is this young naval recruit is killed.
Oh fuck.
During the code red. So Tom Cruise is playing the prosecution lawyer who is going after the people who killed this young naval guy. And Jack Nicholson plays like a highly respected colonel.
Ooh.
And gives an incredible performance. And it is, okay, so it's Aaron Sorkin, who we know from The West Wing and The Newsroom. It is a movie, A Few Good Men. It's where the classic line, like, do you want the truth? I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Oh, Jack Nicholson that's says what that this. Line is. Okay, that line is from this movie. Gotcha. Interesting.
This is a movie where you can put it all on the line. You can work really hard. Tom Cruise is like, son of a bitch, I've got a purpose right now. I've got to get justice for this young naval officer. And he works hard and he makes the world better by getting justice. He does what he wants. It's very hopeful. It feels like the opposite of this movie in that it is all about, like, it's just within our society. Mm-hmm. There is nothing apocalyptic about what's going on here. But when I think about Glenn Close and doing all her work and how evil it made her, how she had this purpose and she's like, no matter what, I'm going to achieve my ends and I'm going to work so hard, and it destroyed her. In A Few Good Men, Tom Cruise and his little prosecution team work so hard to get justice for this little poor little Navy guy. And he gets it. And it's just like, fuck yeah. We can have a purpose that makes the world better instead of having a purpose that will lead us to murdering children. Felt like the opposite to me.
No, that totally tracks. I can definitely see that. I've never seen that movie, though. I didn't even realize that was the setup for it.
It's truly one of the best movies of all time.
90s crazy. Movie? 90s movie, right?
Yeah, early 90s, I want to say.
Okay, so like prime... Tom Cruise being a heartthrob era.
Peak Tom Cruise, peak Jack Nicholson, like clear hero villain. It's just like the stakes are set so nicely. It ends up being that like Tom Cruise is maybe gonna go, like, it's such a severe naval crime to accuse somebody of Jack Nicholson's status of any wrongdoing that like Tom Cruise himself might go to jail.
Oh,
so
shit.
Everyone's just like, just drop it. And he's like, no, I have to do what's right. Fucking rules.
That's rad, especially when it's like, hey, someone in power who fucked up and hurt people actually gets held accountable. Yeah. That's incredibly satisfying to see.
Roxy, I think you might like it. Check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I probably would, especially because like I really like The West Wing. So
you'd love
And that's
it.
The only thing of Aaron Sorkin's I've really seen. I think I might have watched one or two episodes of The Newsroom or whatever the TV show was he did after that. I'm not sure if it was that
Listen,
one.
I'll be honest with you. You've yeah. seen all the Aaron Sorkin you need to. A Few Good Men is great. I love The Newsroom, but I don't know that I'd recommend
it. Yeah, it didn't cause me to want to read more of it.
What's your palate cleanser recommendation?
So my palate cleanser recommendation is a video game. It is the video game Animal Crossing. It is such a chilled out game, low stakes, no world ending thing. You can go at your own pace, not stressful at all. You just go at your own pace, you know, coexist with your animal friends. You can play with others if you want and visit their little worlds that they've decorated and stuff. You get to manipulate the world to the way you want with, like, terraforming things, I think, right? And being able to decorate your place. And just chilling out with animal friends, coexisting with your environment without any threat of apocalypse or plague, with peaceful music and cute art style.
You know, Roxy, you're exactly right. Animal Crossing is very much the opposite of this movie in a lot of ways. But except for one very, very interesting connection, in Animal Crossing New Horizons, Stitches the bear does refer to you constantly as a friggin' abortion.
Oh, damn. You know, he never came to my Animal Crossing island, so I guess I was lucky to
and
avoid that.
Thank God he didn't.
Yeah, Jesus.
Count your lucky stars, Roxy.
Can't even imagine how horrible my experience would have been had he shown up.
No, Animal Crossing is beautiful. Like, that was truly a game that I think saved lives, coming out
during the pandemic.
At the time of the pandemic.
Yeah.
You get to go see your friends on their island. You get to go buy all their turnips.
Yeah, it was such like...
I'll never forget those Sundays.
Yeah, a calming thing to like be able to focus on that. And it felt like the rest of the world was playing it too. Like, even if you didn't care about Animal Crossing or weren't even playing the game yourself, like there was something very calming about seeing everybody else enjoying this like very cute, simple game. And sharing
it really
it with
does
the world.
Feel like the difference between our world turning out like the world from The Girl with All the Gifts and the world that we have now. Like, if Animal, like, I think The Girl with the Gifts is really just, did Animal Crossing come out during the pandemic? Yes or no? It's, that's the hinge point.
Hey, I believe it. All right, Mikey, I had such a good time here talking to you about The Girl with All the Gifts movie, but it's time for us to go, to have a little sign-off, say goodbye to everybody. So how about we give some haunted plugs? So if you would like to find more of us and more of Scary Basement, there is a Scary Basement Twitter, and which is at @scary_basement. We're also on Instagram, which is at @scarybasementpod. And guess what, guys? We got a YouTube. It's uploading 3 days a week. I'm super excited about it. We're getting close to 100 subs, so I'd love for you guys to help us get there. We are on YouTube, which is youtube.com/scarybasementpodcast. So we're very easy to find. Mikey, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me, Mikey McCollar, on Twitter at Secret Blimp, on Instagram at Secret Blimp, on Blue Sky at Secret Blimp, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/secretblimp.
Hell yeah. I am also on Twitter, Twitch, and Blue Sky, all as Red Mage Roxy, so I'm very easy to find over there. Come hang out for a stream. Come say hello to me on Blue Sky. It's very new.
Yeah, it's really 10 people in a giant room.
Yeah.
You can really just talk to whoever you want to talk to on the old Blue Sky. Also, make sure you leave the Scary Basement Podcast a 5-star review. If you like it, that would be helpful for us.
Yeah, and please tell your friends. I'm sure if you're listening to our podcast, you like horror movies, you like spooky movies, or you just have fun hanging out with us talking about it. You've got friends who would be interested in it too, so please go tell your pals. We'd love to see them over here.
And finally, make sure you check out our Patreon. That's at patreon.com/supernpcradio. When you join the Super NPC Radio podcast network, you get access to so much content. You get a monthly scary video game podcast from me and Roxy.
Hell yeah.
You get episodes of Call Me By Your Game Co-op. You get episodes of the Super NPC Games Club, where we cover Sonic Adventure and also other games. But check it out. Get in on that $10 DJ Toad tier. You get so much extra content. We'd love you to do it. Patreon.com/supernpcradio.
Hell yeah. See you guys next week.
Goodbye.